You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. The awards keep coming for mystery writer Katrina McPherson. The first book in her new series featuring Lexi Campbell won the Best Humorous Mystery Award at Left Coast Crime this year. And now book number two has been launched. It's titled Scott and Soda. You can see Katrina McPherson April 20th from 6:30 to 8 at Face in a Book in El Dorado Hills. And she's back in the studio. Hello. Happy New Year. I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. It's been a while, but yeah. It's lovely to be back. Thank you.
Very glad to have you here. Are you at the point where you feel pressure and expectation in your writing because people are so familiar and so much track your characters in your books?
Not so much with this one, because I started something new and I felt as if I was in charge again. So that's a yes. You've nailed it. Absolutely. Because the difference in feeling when I started a new series must come from the fact that I feel that everyone who's followed the long series over 12 books owns them as much as I do. Yes. Ha, good question, Beth.
I think in one of the reviews, somebody wrote, I can't wait to see what Katrina McPherson has up her sleeve this time. And that speaks directly to that.
Oh, well, that's very kind. Yeah. I mean, I'm always in the mystery genre, but I've got a historical detective series that's very traditional and modern, quite dark, kind of maybe shading into gothic suspense novels. And then this comic series, which was raising the stakes for me, because if you say this is a humorous novel and no one laughs, you're in trouble. So I was quite scared.
How do humor and mystery go together? How are they paired typically? Or is this just because of that quirky, funny side of your own personality?
Well, I think so there's two different kinds. There's the very cozy, whimsical murder mysteries that I sometimes have trouble with because they're light-hearted and breezy and cheerful, which murder is not. But then if the humour is a bit darker or sicker even, then kind of toward Carl Hyacin would be right at one end of this continuum. I think that's fine because violent death does shade into, you know, shameful giggling sometimes. I mean, that's our dark secret, isn't it?
Cozy is another word that's used, though, in describing this book series.
Oh,
readers
yeah.
are saying cozy.
Yeah, I know, and that worries me because I think I'll get letters. If they're expecting something cozy, then I think, you know, there are things in this book that might make them jump and drop their knitting. So we'll see.
Another aspect of this that's new is you're really writing from being here. Like, you've settled into being in Northern California now, and your perspective is the world around you.
Yeah.
That's different.
Very much so. I mean, the first Lexi Campbell novel, I wrote it when I'd been here for 5 years, but I wrote it about all the mistakes I made and the things that puzzled me when I first arrived. Mm-hmm. And that was where she was, because she'd just got here. And the second one, she's got her feet under her a bit more, and she thinks she understands, and she's got more of an opinion about quite a lot of California life. So I didn't get any complaints the first time, and I thought I might have because I did poke, well, quite gentle fun, but I did poke a little bit of fun at California, but with warmth, and I'm very happy to be here. So we'll see if California people will accept Lexi Campbell as she is now, a few years in. And
her
what
feet
she's got to say.
Under her, by the way, means on a houseboat this time.
Yes.
Which is a fun twist.
Yeah.
Do readers do that? Do they write to you and scrutinize the flow of the mystery or the clues or the characters? What do you get back from them?
People pay compliments, which is lovely. They complain about things that they say a character would never do, which I find quite interesting.
Do you remember an example?
Yes, in the not with Lexi so much, but the historical series that I write, the detective is called Dandy Gilver, and people are very interested in her marriage, which is a successful early 20th century upper class marriage. It's an alliance that's produced children, and then they go their separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
And people are very upset about the fact that she settled for this and want to advise her to get divorced, which she would never do. It would be social death and terribly embarrassing and not the done thing at all. But I get quite a lot of correspondence.
And do you engage? Do you explain back why you wrote what you wrote? Or
Yes, I usually say that I'm not in charge of what happens, that I'm following the characters where they go, and my expectation is that she won't do that. So I kind of duck out of responsibility.
You have referenced this before, so let's spend a moment there in how, let's take a character, for example, unfolds in you hearing the voice, and you either find or use a photo, too, of, for example, Lexi or Dandy Gilbert.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, I only just realised I was writing something, a little guest blog to promote this Scott and Soda, and I realised I've got no idea what Lexi Campbell looks like.
Oh.
Someone said, why not write a post about personal style and the style of this world at the Last Ditch Motel? And I thought, what a great idea. So I wrote a bit about my, you know, Doris Day tribute hair colour and all that stuff. And then I wrote about the other characters that live at the Last Ditch and got to Lexi and thought, I haven't got a clue. I have no idea what she looks like. So that's something I'm going to have to think about before the third novel of this thing that I think is a trilogy. But in the third book, I want her to start dating. I'm going to send her into online dating. So I think I'll have to think more about her clothes and how she puts herself out there. And you're laughing, thank you, because I think there's a world of fun to be had when she starts to date.
That's a very relatable arena for her to be in, especially after this book in which she essentially wants to date a dead man. So
yeah, and she's really feeling that she is the, she's the only single one in her group of friends. And they're very kind, but even their kindness is beginning to grate.
Am I the only person who initially thought Last Ditch Mystery Series meant that you were out of ideas? So you went to kind of a last ditch effort to write something new?
It came from such a small thing when she'd got out of the police station. It's 2 o'clock in the morning on the 4th of July and she's trundled under an underpass and she gets to the only motel she can afford and it's called the Last Ditch Motel. And she thinks, oh, perfect. But it was such a small moment. And then the editor chose to call the series after that.
And by the way, I think it is one of the Amazon reviews. It says, Lexi's friendships with the Last Ditch's unusual residents give this series its big heart.
Oh,
how about that?
Yeah, I absolutely. Guilty as charged. I think starting from when I moved here and I was so far away from everyone I knew, I just started making fictional families. And I do tend to take a protagonist and just coalesce a family of the heart around them. It's my favourite thing to write.
You're listening to Katrina McPherson. Many of you might know she lives in Davis, and she does have an event coming up Saturday, April 20th at Face in a Book in El Dorado Hills. The second book in this series is Scott and Soda. Scotch and Soda is really easy to say, but this is Scott and Soda, the little play. And I imagine book three is in the writing process already, correct?
I've written a one-page proposal, and I'm sitting with my fingers crossed. I'm writing something else at the moment, but I've got my fingers crossed. I think it'll be called Scott on the Rocks, if they go for it.
Scott Free was the first one, by the way. And back to that kind of let it flow, I've heard you say you literally will walk around with the laptop just typing as you're thinking as the story reveals itself to you.
Yeah, I started a new novel on Monday. So this is Wednesday, so 2,000 words Monday, 2,000 words Tuesday, and when I leave here, I'll go to a coffee shop and get it up to 6,000 words. And I haven't got, I think by the end of today, I'll be at the end of the bit that I know, and then I'll just have to see what happens.
Wow. So what happened Monday when you began? I
opened a new file, draft one, and typed chapter one, and sat for 5 minutes and wrote a line, deleted it, wrote another line, deleted it. And wrote it a third time. I can't remember what it was because I haven't read it yet. But I thought, well, I've done this. This is novel number 27 that I started on Monday. And I think you've got to be able to do it now. You've done it 26 times.
No outline.
No outline.
No topical net. No matrix. Nothing.
No. Hmm. Just a tiny, tiny little pip of an idea that's probably going to be one line on page 73. But it's enough. It's interesting enough to make me think, I want to get there.
I really want to know what that idea is.
Oh, no, but I can't. I shouldn't have said that because I don't write. I'll say anything about the things that I've written, but the thing that I'm writing now, I'm really controlling about it in case it pops it, like sticking a pin in a balloon. So, but it is Dandy Gilver, I'll say that. It's Dandy Gilver. It's okay. 1937. It's hard to write a lighthearted book set in 1937. Things are getting quite dark overhead. I worry about her sons. My husband says they're fictional. Just let them survive. I say, you don't understand.
So let me get you to the book then. Why don't you read a little bit from Scott and Soda? And of course, if there are murders, there are autopsies. And do a little setup to where we're going to in this book.
I hope everyone's enjoying their breakfast. Beth picked this bit.
I picked the autopsy. Sorry, everyone.
Okay, so this is a conversation between Lexi and Todd and Roger. Is that all the people who are there? Todd and Roger, who are her neighbours. They're both doctors, but for reasons that are explained in the first book, they live in a room in the Last Ditch Motel. And Lexi's asking, that's enough of a setup, right?
I think that's good.
Lexi's asking, and sorry, I can't do the California accents, but she says, what came out in the autopsy? He was wearing a Halloween costume, Roger said. Right, I said, the jimmy wig, that's a kind of Tam O'Shanter with integral ginger hair that Scottish people wear. A jimmy wig stapled on. No, said Roger, under his clothes. He was wearing a second skin costume. It had chest hair and fake junk and a fake bullet wound. It was on under his sweatshirt and the mom jeans, made of some kind of Nerf style stuff, neoprene maybe. It was a fake, I started to say much too loud. Then I bent over and whispered instead, that was a fake bullet wound? And the cop fell for it? Oh, my God, she's never going to live this down. She thought a fake bullet wound in a neoprene onesie was a real bullet wound in a guy's actual flesh? Wow. Well, 4 days in the water can do strange things to a corpse, Todd said, trying to be fair. But he wasn't in the water 4 days, said Roger. That's another thing Maurice told me. Maurice works in the, what do you call it, where the autopsies are done?
In the morgue?
In the morgue, yeah. He spent 3 days happily decomposing at an ambient temperature, outside but not exposed, and only then did he hit the water. He spent 3 days lying out in a ditch somewhere without anyone finding him, dressed in a fake birthday suit, junk and all, with a hat on, and no one reported it, I said. So what did he die of if it wasn't a bullet wound, said Todd. Sitting, Roger said, not lying, Lexi, sitting. From the pattern of hypostasis in his butt and lower legs, he was sitting up. And he wasn't out in the wilds. There was no rodent damage. He was somewhere pretty sheltered. How? I said. How could he be sitting out for 4 days? What, like at a bus stop on a park bench? I know Quento's not the community it once was, but that's nuts. I think, said Roger, this is only my theory, but I think it's seasonal. Huh? Said Todd, as in calendar specific. I was stumped, but the light was dawning on Todd. Oh, my Godisha Corsage, he said. He was sitting propped up on someone's porch for Halloween.
Sitting dead as a Halloween decoration.
I've often thought that the best place to do a murder is to murder someone about the 30th and then just leave them sitting on a porch while you run away.
So clever. And while you were reading, I was watching the faces of Cody Drabble and Antonio Munoz and Mark Jones in our control room, and everybody's just tracking and wide-eyed and wait, what? And laughing. So I bring that up to say that your audiobooks are really popular too. And it's fun because people get to hear you reading just like you did in your Scottish accent.
Oh, I know. It's such a skill and I'd love to do more. But I just launched a newsletter and I gave away a short story, which was great because I got to write it and then give it to people and there was no editorial process. And Andy Jones, who I'm sure you know,
yes, from UC Davis,
said, why don't you, instead of giving away a little file with typing on it, why don't you give away a recorded short story? Mm. And that could be your prize for everything forever. I thought, what a great idea. He said, all you need is a microphone and you go into a cupboard, a closet with lots of clothes in it. And I thought, well, I can do that. So that's my next project, is my little cottage industry of recording short stories.
Well, you do have friends at radio stations. You can always record somewhere else too.
Why, thank you. And that's on tape. Thank you.
But an audiobook doesn't work for everybody. There are authors you want to hear read their story. You want to hear Michelle Obama read her book.
Oh, yes, I did.
You know,
it was heaven.
I think that a murder mystery with the Scotland connection written by you really begs for the voice.
Not these ones though, because as I say, I can't do the California accent, and I would
Have you tried?
Oh yeah,
can I hear say you try?
Okay, well here's
I live in the valley.
Here's what I can. I live in the valley. I can do the up talk. I can do the vocal fry, if I have to, and I can switch. A friend's got a dog. He's passed away now, but she had a little dog called Harry, H-E-R-R-Y. And I had to say his voice in an American accent, because when I said Harry, he didn't know that I meant him. So I'd go, Harry, 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 Harry. And he'd turn round and come to my voice. So I can do it a little bit.
You can do it.
But then I think maybe like in revenge for Star Trek, I could just do the terrible California accents in this book.
So what are you going to do if you read this one? Will you read it as Katrina McPherson narrating?
I could try. I could get, well, because I was a linguist before I was a writer, I know what I don't know. And if someone explains the sound that I need to make, I know where to put my teeth and tongue and soft palate and, you know, uvula and alveolar ridge and everything. So I know how to do it. I can still do it. It sounds a bit of a long process.
So you can try this. If I say Sacramento is in the valley and it's going to be hot this summer, can you do that?
Sacramento is in the valley and it's going to be hot this summer.
Pretty good. Now let me give you my Minnesota sound. The snow was making me really cold when I went inside and my nose was frozen.
The snow was making it really cold when I went inside and my nose was frozen.
Oh, you got it. You got it.
I've got a second career as a parrot coming up.
This conversation's called Fun with Katrina McPherson. Linguistic fun with Katrina McPherson. All right. What else is in your mind that you want to do? And are you spending time mentoring and teaching right now as you're writing?
I always feel a bit of a fraud when I teach, but I do teach. And normally I say, tell me what you want to know. And then I think, well, I must know how to do it because I've done it. So I sit down and think, well, how do I do it? And then I'll tell people in good faith and honestly what I do and how well it works. So I'm just about to do that at the University of the Pacific next month, 17th of May, at a creative writing conference. And then down in Culver City in Los Angeles, I'm teaching an hour on how to conceal twists and plant red herrings.
Ah.
So I need to work out how I do that sometime before June. But mentoring, one-to-one over coffee, I find easier and less, I feel like less of a fraud when I do it that way.
When you explain that you walk around and just let the story unfold, I don't know how you would teach plotting twists and red herrings.
Well, exactly. I was just up at Vancouver where I won that award, which is great, although it wasn't a wrestling belt.
And you'll understand that reference with our next guest.
I was sitting in the front row of a panel that was all about crafting twists and reveals, and I thought, I'll get some good stuff here. And then didn't the person who's asked me to come and teach that course down in Culver City come and sit beside me and see me writing all these feverish notes. So he's going to be sitting there in June thinking, this sounds familiar.
Do you do it with a strategy?
Do I do...
Do you craft the twists?
This is my problem. I thought it's a really interesting thing to talk about, but I have to work out in the next couple of months how it is that I do it. I mean, I do it. So somewhere in the dusty corners of my brain, I must know how. I haven't thought about it yet.
Well, the fun setup for this second book in the Lexi Campbell series is Lexi throws a Halloween party for her motley crew of motel pals. The only single man is too old for her, too wrapped up in the case of beer chilling in the slough. And oh yes, that man is too dead.
Too dead. Well.
Great to have you here, as always, Katrina McPherson. I hope I see you soon again this year.
Thank you. Thank you for the accent coaching. Thanks for having me.
That was a lot of fun. The new book in the Last Ditch Mystery Series is titled Scott and Soda. Katrina will be at Face in a Book at El Dorado Hills, 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th. By the way, next week I'm going to be recording an interview with Professor Deirdre Wolnick. She is climber Alex Honnold's mom, We'll be talking about climbing and much more. She's written her memoir, which is titled The Sharp End of Life, A Mother's Story. We'll talk through her childhood, a difficult marriage, raising her children, and then becoming a climber athlete herself in her late 50s. So if you have a question for Deirdre, you can call us and leave us a voicemail. The number is 916-234-3279. You might hear your question and Deirdre's answer on our show on May 1st. So the number again is 916-234-3279. Thanks again, Katrina.
Thank you.
And this is Insight on CAP Radio.